Hi, you're watching Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris. With me is Sharad Kutan. In August last year, Philip Alston, the then United Nations Special Rapporteur on Extreme Poverty and Human Rights, travelled to Sarawak, Sabah, Kelantan, Selangor and KL. And during that 11-day visit, he met with government officials, civil society, academics and people affected by poverty in urban and rural areas. His report on poverty in Malaysia from that official visit was released earlier this week. He joins us now to discuss the findings. Philip, good evening. Thank you so much for joining us on the show. Now, the Malaysian government has denied backtracking on commitments to revise the national poverty line. They say that they have adopted a new methodology to measure the poverty line, the details of which have not yet been made public. But how are you reading this, Philip? Do you welcome the response by the Malaysian government?
Well, it's been a bit of a yo-yo, to be honest. The initial response to my report, the immediate response was, it's nonsense, we're not changing. Within a day, Prime Minister Mahathir Mohamad and various other senior officials, including Anwar Ibrahim, had said, actually, the UN's right. Our poverty rate is probably closer to 15 or 20%, and we need a dramatic change. When the new government was asked to respond to my report, they sent an official statement saying, we stand by the old poverty line, we see no reason for change, it's valid according to international standards. Now, I've seen comments by the minister in recent days saying we are going to change it. I very much hope that's the case. The information that he's provided is not especially encouraging in the sense that there's no details given of a procedure which is going to ensure real expert inputs. And the risk is that they will move the line a little bit so that rather than reporting 0.4% of people in poverty, it'll be another not very credible, very low percentage.
Philip, in your report, you note that overall Malaysia has made immense progress on poverty alleviation, but, and I'm quoting you really, the job remains incomplete. That's a fascinating statement in view of the fact that much of your report now is mired in this discussion about the poverty line, about data, about standards. Did you want your report to have to be led by this particular, what now is controversial statements that you've made? Is that what you wanted from this report? That is this conversation?
Well, of course, these issues are complex. The starting point, as you rightly say, is that Malaysia has made extraordinary economic progress in recent decades, and that's terrific. The problem is that when you have been so highly successful, but you end up having a very significant poverty rate, it means you could have done far better. And instead, what's happened in Malaysia is the classic neoliberal recipe where the rich have got much richer, inequality has grown, but yes, people at the very bottom are better off than they once were. But they're still living in conditions that are abysmal. And if you think that having one in every six Malaysians living in poverty is a good result from the economic miracle and the best you can achieve, then I don't think that's the appropriate bottom line.
Right.
My basic proposition is that until Malaysia acknowledges that there are people living in poverty, it's not actually going to start changing the basic policies to ensure that policies are targeted towards that group to lift them out of the situation they are living in.
Well, one of the ways to do that is to ensure that we've got the right data. And you noted in your report, if I were to quote the report, you said key poverty-related data is often inaccessible or even non-existent, which is counterproductive and leaves policymakers essentially working in the dark, end quote. Now, I'm wondering whether this is unique to Malaysia, because often disaggregated data, household survey, micro data, it can be seen as politically sensitive. I mean, is it unique to Malaysia to perhaps not be as forthcoming with such data?
I'm not aware really of any other democratic country that suppresses that sort of data. First of all, in Malaysia, there's a decision not to collect certain data because, presumably, of worries about what it might show. And secondly, the data that is available is not shared with researchers, with the World Bank, and with other organizations that can really help to shed light on the issues. When we say this is politically sensitive, we're talking in code language about ethnic differences and so on, but the ideal policy approach is to know what the ethnic differences are in economic terms, and to encourage the government to adopt policies that will try to improve the disparities, rather than saying, let's not know what's going on, let's sweep it all under the rug.
Speaking of sweeping things under the rug, the question of Malaysia's underclass, the migrant labour that are essential part of the economy, you noted in your report, and I know the Malaysian government has also responded to your claims that they somehow, by writing them out, the statistics and the picture looks much better than it really is. How do you, and what is actually the responsibility of national governments to these foreign populations, to the extent that they are net importers of foreign labour? Do they have a responsibility to them in terms of poverty alleviation?
I think you can't have it both ways, in the sense that if you really don't want very significant numbers of people coming from abroad, and Malaysia has as many as 6 million migrant workers, although the estimates are unclear, then you don't go out of your way to encourage vast numbers to come. But Malaysia does do that. It has benefited enormously over the years from foreign labour. Much of its economic miracle is the result of the very cheap foreign labour. But that doesn't get you off the hook in terms of treating those people decently. It's not to say that you suddenly have to feather bed them, but it is to say that you have to give them access to basic health services, you have to give their children access to real educational opportunities, and you can't just treat them as non-people who are contributing to the economic success of the country, but will get absolutely nothing in return other than miserable wages.
Philip, I'd like to continue our conversation in just a little bit. We're going to take a quick break, but I would like to have you stay on the line. Let's continue our conversation with Philip Olson about the ways in which countries should respond to poverty. Stay tuned to Consider This.